I remember when the skies above Tertius were filled with transport ships, when the manufactorums never ceased their churning, when the hive pulsed with the heartbeat of industry. Now those memories feel like borrowed dreams from another man's life. The flames took our hab block in the sump hollows 3 days ago. I watched 16 years of careful existence disappear in a conflagration that turned the reinforced plascrete walls to ash. The Ashbourne Reavers had pushed into Ferric Fang's territory, and our neighborhood became the battlefield where their hatred found expression in Prometheum and autogun fire. My name is Garvin Hask. Once I was Foreman Tertius of Manufactorum Block 7 Delta, responsible for 317 souls who assembled munitions components for the Imperial Guard. Now I am simply a man trying to keep what remains of his family alive in a dying hive. We fled with what we could carry. Marina, my wife of 20 years, brought her Medi-Kay kit, force of habit from her years serving in the public dispensary before it closed. My brother Davin salvaged his old flak vest from his conscription days, now worn thin at the shoulders and missing half its ceramic plates. I took only practical things, a worn multi-tool, water purification tablets, and the identity cards that once meant something when there was authority that cared to check them. The Middle Hive had once been the pride of Tertius, where the worthy labored and the machinery of imperial bureaucracy turned with well-oiled precision. Now it stretched before us like a corpse picked clean by scavengers. The wide thoroughfares designed to accommodate the shift changes of thousands of workers lay empty save for drifts of ash and manufacturing waste. The statues of imperial heroes stood defaced or toppled. Even the bronze aquila that had adorned the central administration spire had been prized away, likely melted down for its metal value. We moved carefully through the abandoned streets. The RBTs had withdrawn to the upper spires months ago when the tithe quotas failed for the third consecutive cycle. The governor had made promises, broadcast on every Vox channel, that the Imperium would send aid, that the disruption to trade routes was temporary, that the administratum understood our plight. The lies of a desperate man, I suspected even then. The collapse came gradually, then suddenly. First, the shipments of raw materials slowed, then the off-world merchants stopped extending credit. The manufactorum scaled back production, implementing rolling blackouts to conserve power. Work shifts were cut. Ration cards issued. Then the nobles and merchant houses began their quiet exodus to other worlds, taking their wealth and influence with them. Without the enforced discipline of daily labor and with hunger gnawing at their bellies, people grew desperate. The gangs, always present in the underhive, seized the opportunity. They expanded upward, level by level, offering protection, food, water, all at terrible prices. The administratum's final communication had been a coldly worded notice that Tertius was being placed under interdiction pending review of its tithe compliance. No ships would come. No aid would arrive. The Imperium had written us off as a failing asset. We paused at what had once been the Grand Mercantile Exchange, a vast domed structure where factors and merchants had once haggled over the products of our labor. Its stained glass windows, depicting the Emperor bestowing bounty upon the faithful, were now shattered. The floor was littered with moldering ledgers and data slates, the detritus of commerce abandoned in haste. Davin signaled for us to stop. His years in the planetary defense forces had honed instincts that had kept us alive these past months. He pointed toward a shadowed alcove where the statue of St. Drusus had once stood. Something moved in the darkness. The water merchant emerged slowly, hands raised to show he carried no weapons. His cart was pathetic, three containers of cloudy liquid that might once have been drinking water. His eyes darted constantly, and a nervous tick pulled at the corner of his mouth. The insignia on his tattered coat marked him as a former guild hydrologist, one of the specialists who had maintained the hive's water recycling systems. I approached him cautiously, offering a power cell as trade. His eyes widened at the sight of it. Such things were valuable currency now. He accepted it with shaking hands and whispered his warning to me. The gangs were no longer fighting each other. They had formed an alliance of convenience and were methodically working their way up through the hive levels, eliminating anyone who might challenge their control of the remaining resources. He called it the cleansing. The water merchant's information was worth more than the cloudy liquid he provided. He spoke of the Ashbourne Reavers and Ferric Fangs moving together, their old hatreds set aside in favor of survival. He mentioned other things too, rumors of organized squads moving with military precision, of executions rather than the chaotic violence typical of gang warfare. His words tumbled out in a frantic stream, as though unburdening himself of this knowledge might somehow save him. I thanked him with a nod and rejoined Marina and Davin. We moved on quickly, the merchant's warning adding urgency to our steps. The upper levels of the hive represented our only hope, the administrative sectors and noble quarters where resources might still exist, where the RBTs might still maintain some semblance of order. Night fell as we navigated the abandoned commercial district. The darkness in a failing hive is absolute. No lumens shine from windows, no streetlights guide the way. We found shelter in the remains of a Factorum Guild office, its reinforced doors providing some security against whatever stalked the darkness outside. Marina tended to Davin's leg in the dim light of our chemical lamp. He had torn the muscle climbing through the wreckage of a collapsed hab bridge 2 days earlier, and infection threatened. Her supply of antiseptics was dangerously low. I watched her work with the same methodical care she had shown when treating factory injuries in better days. Her hands remained steady even as the rest of our world crumbled. Morning brought a thick fog that rolled through the streets, condensation from the failing environmental systems that once regulated the hive's atmosphere. It provided cover but limited visibility to mere meters. We moved cautiously, using the map scratched onto the back of my old work authorization card as a guide. The silence shattered without warning. The distinctive chatter of stub automatics echoed from a side street. We pressed ourselves into the recessed doorway of what had once been a shrine to the Emperor. Inside, the altar had been stripped of anything valuable, and the devotional candles had been taken for their wax. Only the stern face of the Emperor remained, watching impassively from a faded picked plate on the wall. They passed by our hiding place without noticing us. Five men wearing the crude insignia of the Ashborn Reavers. Their faces were marked with the distinctive ash-smeared patterns that gave the gang its name, but their movements betrayed more discipline than I had expected from underhive scum. They moved in formation, weapons at the ready, scanning doorways and windows with practiced efficiency. We remained frozen until their footsteps faded. Davin's expression was grim. His military experience recognized what I had only sensed. These weren't merely thugs. Someone had trained them, organized them. The gangs were evolving into something more dangerous. Our path took us through what had once been a Medicaid facility. The main treatment halls had been stripped of equipment and supplies, but the administrative sections remained largely intact, overlooked by less methodical scavengers. Marina moved through the abandoned offices with purpose, searching for anything that might supplement her dwindling medical supplies. It was in the lower levels of the facility that we found them, the bodies. They lay in rows, dozens of them, executed with single shots to the back of the head. Some wore the colors of the ferric fangs, others the markings of smaller gangs I didn't recognize. But mixed among them were ordinary citizens, factory workers judging by their clothing merchants, even what appeared to be a low-ranking administratum scribe still clutching a data slate in his stiffened fingers. The executions had been carried out with cold efficiency. No signs of struggle, no wasted ammunition. Most disturbing were the marks on some of the corpses, small, precise incisions at the base of the skull as though something had been removed or implanted. Davin examined the wounds with the detachment of a man who had seen death before. He pointed out details that my civilian eyes had missed, the positioning of the bodies, the precise nature of the wounds. This wasn't the chaotic violence of gang warfare. This was systematic, organized. These people had been processed. I felt the first stirrings of a fear deeper than mere concern for survival. Something methodical was happening in the dying hive, something that went beyond the expected collapse of order. The cleansing the water merchant had spoken of wasn't simply gangs consolidating territory, it was something more purposeful. We gathered what supplies we could find, antiseptic solutions from overlooked cabinets, bandages, a few precious stim shots that might keep us moving when exhaustion threatened to overcome us. Marina found a cache of water purification tablets hidden beneath a fallen ceiling panel, a small treasure in a world where clean water had become more valuable than gold. As we prepared to leave, I noticed something clutched in the hand of one of the executed workers. Prying open the stiffened fingers revealed a small metal object, an aquila pendant, but modified with unfamiliar markings etched into the wings. Davin examined it briefly before returning it to the corpse. His expression had darkened, but he offered no explanation. We left the Medicaid facility as silently as we had entered it, each of us carrying new burdens of knowledge along with our scavenged supplies. The upper levels of the hive beckon, promising if not safety, then at least temporary reprieve from the methodical horror that was consuming the lower reaches of our dying world. The fog had thinned as the environmental systems struggled through their automated cycles. In the distance, the central spire of the hive rose like a tarnished needle against the polluted sky. Once it had represented authority and order. Now it stood as a monument to abandonment. Somewhere up there, the planetary governor and his administration might still cling to the fiction of control, surrounded by the last functioning RBT's forces. We moved toward it, one careful step at a time, through the corpse of what had once been a proud imperial world. The manufactorums that had once produced munitions and equipment for the Emperor's army stood silent, their mighty furnaces cold, their assembly lines motionless. Rust crept across surfaces that generations of workers had kept polished through diligent maintenance. Devotional shrines that had once burned with thousands of candles lay dark and empty. Tertius was dying not with the dramatic violence of invasion or the cleansing fire of exterminatus, but with the slow, grinding inevitability of neglect. The Imperium's attention had shifted elsewhere, and we had been forgotten. I led my family forward, toward the center of the hive, each step carrying us further from the home we had lost and deeper into the unknown dangers that awaited us. Behind us, the methodical cleansing continued its inexorable progress upward through the levels. Ahead lay uncertainty and the faint, perhaps foolish hope that somewhere in this dying hive, a pocket of humanity and order might still exist. The weight of my former identity, Garvin Hask, Foreman Tertius, respected citizen of a productive imperial world, slipped away with each step. In its place grew something harder and more primal, a man with nothing left to lose but the two lives that walked beside him. We left the Medicae facility as the artificial dawn cycle struggled to penetrate the haze of industrial pollutants. The moisture in the air carried the metallic tang of promethium and the sour undertones of human desperation. Our water supplies had dwindled to dangerous levels, each sip measured with the precision of a Medicae administering the last dose of a rare pharmaceutical. Davin's military experience proved invaluable as we navigated the corpse of the middle hive. He moved with a hunter's caution, testing each shadow before committing to it. Marina followed, her Medicae's eyes constantly scanning for resources others might have overlooked. The hunger had become a constant companion, a hollow ache that occasionally flared into knife-like pangs that doubled me over. The abandoned administratum complex loomed ahead, its facade once a gleaming testament to imperial bureaucracy now pockmarked with the scars of looters and the elements. The bronze aquilas that had adorned the entrance lay toppled and defaced, their wings hacked away for scrap metal. I remembered coming here in better times, waiting in orderly queues to renew work permits or file production reports. The memory felt impossibly distant. Davin spotted the signs first, subtle marks scratched into the ferrocrete near the service entrance, indicating a water source within. Such markings were a crude code among survivors, though following them often led to ambush rather than salvation. We approached with appropriate caution, weapons ready. The complex's lower levels had been stripped of anything valuable, but as we descended deeper, the evidence of hasty abandonment rather than methodical looting became apparent. Data slates still sat on desks, their batteries long dead. Personal effects remained in drawers. Whatever had driven the administratum staff from this place had come suddenly. In the environmental control sublevel, we found what the markings had promised. A moisture reclamation system still functioned on emergency power, collecting condensation from the walls and air. A thin stream of water, not clean, but cleaner than what we'd been drinking, trickled into a collection basin. We filled our containers in silence, each of us aware that lingering too long in one place invited discovery. The sound came from behind a sealed maintenance door, a faint rhythmic tapping. Davin positioned himself with his back to the wall, stub revolver raised. Marina prepared a makeshift weapon from a length of pipe. I approached the door, multi-tool in hand, ready to retreat at the first sign of danger. The man inside had barricaded himself with filing cabinets and furniture. His guild merchant robes hung in tatters from his emaciated frame, and the gold teeth that had once signified his status had been pried from his mouth, leaving raw gaps in his gums. His eyes held the feverish gleam of one who had witnessed horrors beyond comprehension. The merchant's information spilled forth in a torrent of desperate whispers. He'd been hiding here for weeks, venturing out only to collect water from the reclamation system. His position in the Merchant Guild had given him access to information others lacked, specifically, communications between the Upper Spire authorities and off-world interests. What he described matched the patterns we'd observed, but cast them in a more sinister light. The gangs weren't simply filling the power vacuum left by the retreating RBTs. They were being armed, organized, and directed by elements within the Upper Spire. The cleansing wasn't random violence, but a coordinated effort to process the lower hive population. Process. The word sent a chill through me that had nothing to do with the damp cold of the maintenance room. The merchant's knowledge came at a price. He wanted to join us to escape the complex where he'd been trapped by his fear and weakness. Davin's expression made his opinion clear, another mouth to feed, another slow-moving target. But the merchant offered more than just information. He knew of a service transit system, rarely used even in better times, that could take us closer to the upper levels while bypassing the gang-controlled main thoroughfares. I weighed the options with the cold calculus of survival. The merchant was weak, possibly deranged, but his knowledge might prove valuable. In the end, pragmatism won out. We allowed him to gather his meager possessions, including a data slate he claimed contained evidence of the Upper Spire's betrayal. As we prepared to move on, memories of my former life surfaced unbidden. The Promethium refineries where I had supervised 300 workers, the pride I'd taken in exceeding production quotas. The gradual withdrawal of the Mechanicus Adepts had been the first warning sign, those red-robed figures silently dismantling key components of the machinery and departing without explanation. Then the food shipments had slowed, reduced to half rations and then quarter rations. The Planetary Defense Force, never robust to begin with, had been redeployed to the spaceport, ostensibly to protect incoming supply shipments that never materialized. I recalled the last day I'd reported for work. The refineries had been operating at minimal capacity for weeks. The remaining workers gathered in the main assembly hall, awaiting instructions that never came. By midday, with no word from management, people began to drift away. I'd locked my office, pocketed my security pass out of habit, and walked home through streets already showing signs of the collapse to come. No official announcement ever declared the end of operations. The hive simply began to consume itself. The merchant led us through maintenance tunnels that still bore the red wax seals of the Mechanicus on their access panels. These had been broken long ago, the copper wiring stripped from the walls. The air grew thicker as we descended, heavy with the smell of decay and human waste. The transit system the merchant had promised turned out to be a series of cargo platforms designed to move supplies between administrative sectors. Most lay dormant, their power cells looted, but one remained functional, barely. The platform juddered and groaned as it carried us upward through the darkness of the transit shaft. The merchant huddled in the center, muttering calculations about weight distribution and power consumption. Davin kept his weapon trained on the man, his distrust evident in every line of his posture. Marina tended to a suppurating wound on my forearm, a cut from our passage through the collapsed section of HAB Block 7 that had become infected despite her care. The platform delivered us to the edge of what had once been the mercantile district, the commercial heart of Tertius, where off-world traders had come to negotiate contracts for our industrial output. The broad avenues designed to accommodate cargo eights and merchant caravans now hosted a grotesque parody of commerce. The bazaar sprawled across the main concourse, a patchwork of scavenged materials forming makeshift stalls. The merchants here dealt not in manufactured goods or exotic imports, but in the remnants of humanity's desperate struggle for survival. A man with medical insignia on his tattered uniform extracted augmetic components from a semi-conscious body splayed across a metal table. Nearby, a woman measured blood into small vials, offering nutrient paste in exchange. The smell of cooking meat permeated the air, its source better left unexamined. We skirted the edges of this grim marketplace, our guild merchant guide shrinking into himself as though fearing recognition. His fears weren't unfounded. I noted several individuals in the crowd wearing the remnants of guild regalia, now reduced to trading trinkets or selling themselves to survive. The gang presence was unmistakable. Members of the Ashborn Reavers patrolled the perimeter, their crude ash markings now supplemented with more disciplined equipment, matching flak armor, standardized weapons. They moved with purpose rather than the swaggering menace typical of underhive gangs. Most disturbing was their methodical collection of specimens, individuals selected from the crowd and led away in sealed containers resembling cargo pods. The victims showed no resistance, their expressions vacant, compliant. Our merchant guide identified a stall where water and nutrient paste might be obtained at less extortionate rates. The proprietor, a former factorum supervisor like myself, recognized my old authorization badge and offered a marginally better exchange rate for the power cells we traded. While Marina negotiated, I observed the crowd, noting the patterns of movement, the hierarchies that had established themselves in this new economy of desperation. A disturbance near the eastern edge of the bazaar drew attention. A gang squad had cornered a group of refugees, exhausted, malnourished figures who had probably emerged from the lower levels seeking sustenance. Rather than the summary execution I expected, the gang members sorted through the refugees with disturbing precision, separating them into groups based on criteria I couldn't discern. The selected individuals were escorted to the waiting containers while the others were simply driven away, back toward the lower levels from which they'd come. The merchant tugged urgently at my sleeve, pointing toward a structure that had once been a Vox relay station. Unlike most buildings in the district, it showed signs of recent maintenance, a generator hummed outside, and crude antennas had been affixed to its roof. The merchant explained in hushed tones that some independent operators had maintained the equipment, hoping to intercept communications from other hive cities or even off-world sources. We approached cautiously. The operator, a gaunt woman with the distinctive implant scars of a former Vox officer, regarded us with suspicion until our merchant guide presented his guild credentials. She allowed us inside, where banks of salvaged equipment hummed and clicked, scanning frequencies in search of signals penetrating the atmospheric interference. The fragmentary messages captured on her equipment painted a grim picture. Other hive cities across Tertius reported similar conditions: gradual withdrawal of imperial presence, resource scarcity, collapse of civil authority. The pattern suggested not random misfortune, but coordinated abandonment. Most disturbing was a partial transmission from what appeared to be an inquisitorial acolyte, referencing controlled population reduction and resource conservation protocols. The Vox officer had compiled these fragments into a crude chronology, tracking the spread of the collapse across the planet's major population centers. The pattern radiated outward from the capital, suggesting a deliberate strategy rather than cascading system failure. She'd attempted to broadcast distress signals but received no response from off-world. Either no one was listening or no one cared. As we examined her findings, the merchant grew increasingly agitated. He produced his data slate, comparing its contents to the Vox officer's compilation. The correlation was undeniable. Dates of administratum withdrawals aligned with the initiation of gang cleansing operations in each sector. The Upper Spire authorities weren't merely abandoning the lower hive, they were actively facilitating its purging. Davin's military experience provided context for what we were seeing. He identified patterns in the gang operations that suggested Imperial Guard tactics, sweep and clear procedures, containment protocols. Someone with military training was directing these former underhive thugs, transforming them into a crude but effective extinction force. The Vox officer offered us use of her back room for the night, a rare kindness in a world where compassion had become an unaffordable luxury. As Marina treated Davin's infected leg wound, I studied the merchant's data slate more carefully. Among the administrative records and shipping manifests was a directive from an unnamed Upper Spire authority, referencing biomass reclamation quotas and processing centers established in former manufactorum facilities. The implications turned my blood cold. The hive wasn't simply being abandoned, its population was being harvested. For what purpose, the documents didn't specify, but the methodical nature of the operation suggested something far more calculated than mere population culling. I remembered the precise incisions we'd observed on the corpses in the Medicay facility, the vacant expressions of those led into the sealed containers. The gangs weren't just eliminating potential resistance, they were collecting specimens that met specific criteria. The dying hive had become a hunting ground, and we were the prey, Sleep came in fitful bursts, interrupted by the distant sounds of gunfire and the closer noise of the Vox officers' equipment picking up fragmentary transmissions. In the artificial half-light of dawn, we prepared to move on. Our goal remained the same, reach the upper levels where some semblance of Imperial authority might still exist, but now carried the weight of new knowledge. We weren't simply fleeing collapse, we were escaping a deliberate culling. The merchant insisted on showing us one more discovery before we departed, a maintenance access that bypassed the heavily patrolled mid-levels and led directly to the administrative sectors below the upper spire. Vox officer marked it on our crude map, along with locations of known gang checkpoints to avoid. As we gathered our meager supplies, the distant thunder of explosions rolled through the district. The cleansing had reached new sectors, driving fresh waves of refugees toward the bazaar. Our window for relatively safe passage was closing rapidly. With the merchant's data slate secured in my pack and our water containers refilled, we prepared to venture deeper into the nightmare of Tertius Hive's dying heart. The Vox officer's shelter offered us the last comfortable rest we would know for some time. We departed as the artificial lighting system struggled to simulate dawn, the sickly yellow glow barely penetrating the toxic haze that hung over the district. Our guild merchant guide led us through a series of maintenance passages that wound beneath the bazaar, his trembling hands indicating access points on a schematic displayed on his data slate. The descent was not what I had anticipated. After days of pushing upward toward the spire, the merchant's route took us down through cramped utility tunnels that predated the hive's expansion phase. Davin's military instincts bristled at the confined space, but the merchant insisted this pathway would bypass the heavily patrolled mid-levels. I noted how Marina kept one hand on her Medicaid kit and the other on a jagged length of pipe. Trust had become a luxury none of us could afford. Hours into our journey, the merchant's usefulness ended abruptly. A patrol of Ferric Fangs ambushed us at a junction where several maintenance tunnels converged. The merchant's data slate clattered to the ground as three rounds from an auto pistol tore through his chest. Davin reacted with the speed of former military training, dragging Marina and me behind a massive coolant pipe as Law's fire scorched the air around us. In the chaotic minutes that followed, I witnessed the transformation of my brother-in-law from a wounded refugee into the PDF trooper he had once been. With mechanical precision, he eliminated two gang members who had pushed forward too eagerly, their bodies crumpling in the narrow confines of the tunnel. The remaining attackers fell back, calling for reinforcements through crackling Vox units that suggested organized communication networks. We fled deeper into the maintenance system, abandoning the merchant's corpse and following emergency lighting strips that still functioned on backup power. The tunnels grew narrower, the air thicker with the smell of rust and recirculated moisture. The distant sounds of pursuit eventually faded, replaced by the omnipresent drip of condensation and the labored breathing of my injured family. Davin's leg wound had reopened during our escape, leaving a trail of blood that would make tracking us trivial for experienced hunters. Marina applied a compression bandage from her dwindling supplies, her face betraying no emotion as she worked. The cold efficiency with which she stemmed the bleeding reminded me that my wife had seen her share of industrial accidents in the Medicaid dispensary, catastrophic injuries from machinery that devoured limbs as readily as it processed raw materials. We pressed onward through the labyrinthine tunnels, using my old foreman's knowledge of infrastructure systems to navigate. The maintenance passages eventually connected to larger drainage conduits designed to channel waste from the upper levels down to reclamation systems that had long since failed. The stench of human waste mingled with industrial runoff created a miasma that burned the lungs and stung the eyes. The drainage system opened into a vast collection chamber where effluent from multiple levels had once been processed before recycling. Now it stood as a stagnant pool of filth, islands of more solid waste breaking the surface. The chamber's walls rose 50 meters to a ceiling studded with defunct processing equipment. Catwalks crisscrossed the space, most corroded beyond safety, connecting to access points at various levels. It was while surveying this chamber for a viable path forward that I noticed the first signs of something more sinister than mere infrastructure decay. Along one wall, a series of collection pods had been installed, clearly recent additions, their metal surfaces unmarked by the corrosion that affected everything else in the chamber. Each pod was roughly the size of a cargo container, with transparent observation panels and drainage systems that fed into marked receptacles. Davin motioned for us to keep low as we approached these installations. The pods were arranged in a grid pattern, each connected to a central control panel that still hummed with active power. Most disturbing were the restraint systems visible within each pod, medical-grade binding equipment typically used in Medicaid facilities for violent patients. The receptacles beneath the pods bore the stamp of the Adeptus Munitorum, the Imperial organization responsible for supplying the vast armies of the Astra Militarum. Each was categorized with alphanumeric codes and filled with varying levels of fluid. The implications turned my stomach more violently than the chamber's stench. These weren't waste processing units, they were collection facilities for human biological material. Marina examined one of the receptacles with the clinical detachment of a Medicaid. Her fingers traced the official seals, her expression hardening as she recognized the classification codes that matched those used in the public dispensary for blood and tissue samples. Whatever was being collected here was destined for official imperial use, not the black market organ trade that had flourished in the Underhive for decades. The distant sound of voices echoed through the drainage tunnels, forcing us to move on before completing our investigation. We ascended a maintenance ladder to a higher level, entering a network of smaller service tunnels that ran behind the walls of what had once been the central processing sector. Through ventilation grates, we glimpsed abandoned workstations where data servitors had once cataloged the hive's production output. My decision to scout ahead alone was born of necessity rather than courage. Davin's injury had slowed us considerably, and Marina refused to leave his side. I left them concealed in a maintenance alcove with our remaining water and the promise to return within the hour. The service tunnel narrowed as it approached what my mental map identified as the primary distribution hub, a nexus point where resources from the upper spire had once been allocated to the various sectors below. The hub had been repurposed. Through a ventilation grill, I witnessed a scene that defied the grim logic of our collapsed society. The vast circular chamber that had once housed distribution machinery now contained an organized processing facility. Rows of examination tables filled the space, each staffed by figures in unmarked carapace armor directing gang members in their work. The work was methodical human processing. Citizens, clearly from the lower levels based on their attire, were being sorted according to physical condition. Medical equipment had been arranged in stations, where examinations were conducted with cold efficiency. Those deemed acceptable were directed to sealed transport containers similar to the ones we had observed in the bazaar. The others were disposed of with a single shot to the head, their bodies moved to a chute that presumably connected to the drainage system we had traversed. I observed this nightmarish assembly line with mounting horror. The figures supervising the operation moved with military precision, their featureless helmets concealing any human reaction to the processing of hundreds of citizens. Their carapace armor bore no unit insignia, no imperial aquila, no identifying marks of any kind, a deliberate anonymity that spoke of official sanction and deniability. A familiar face among the gang workers caused me to press closer to the grill. Thorn Merrick had operated the primary coolant system's two workstations down from mine in Manufactorum Block 7 Delta. We had shared meal breaks for 15 years, exchanged name day gifts for our children, attended the same imperial services on holy days. Now he moved among the examination tables, directing terrified citizens with the casual brutality of someone who had abandoned his humanity. My shock at this betrayal nearly caused me to reveal my position. I forced myself to remain still as Thorn approached a table near my observation point, close enough that I could hear his exchange with one of the armored supervisors. The conversation confirmed my worst fears. The gangs were being employed as labor for what Thorn referred to as the redistribution initiative. The armored figure mentioned off-world interests and labor allocation quotas with the dispassionate tone of an administratum functionary. Most chilling was the reference to reclamation value when discussing those deemed unsuitable for transport. The rejected were not simply being executed as a mercy, their bodies held value for other purposes. The drainage system, the collection pods, the Munitorum containers, all pieces of a puzzle whose complete picture I was beginning to comprehend. I retreated from the ventilation grill, my mind racing with the implications of what I had witnessed. The systematic collapse of Tertius Hive suddenly appeared less like abandonment and more like deliberate harvesting. The Imperium wasn't simply writing off a failing world, it was extracting maximum value from its population before consigning it to oblivion. My return path to Marina and Davin was interrupted by the heavy tread of armored boots. I pressed myself into a maintenance shaft as a patrol of gang members passed, led by one of the unmarked figures in carapace armor. Their vox units crackled with reports of containment breaches in the lower levels and extraction quotas falling behind schedule. The precision of their language, the military cadence of their movement, these were not Underhive scum who had seized an opportunity. They were instruments of Imperial policy. I found Marina bent over Davin's prone form, her medikay's hands working frantically to stem fresh bleeding from his wound. The pallor of his skin told me what Marina's determined expression would not. Infection had taken hold, and without proper medical intervention, his chances were diminishing by the hour. Our need to find proper medical supplies added urgency to an already desperate situation. We moved as quickly as Davin's condition allowed, following service tunnels that paralleled the main distribution corridors. Through occasional glimpses into the wider facility, I witnessed more evidence of the redistribution initiative, staging areas where processed citizens were held in medically induced stasis, administration sections where data servitors cataloged human cargo with the same cold efficiency they had once applied to manufacturing output. Our progress was halted by a security bulkhead that sealed the service tunnel. The access panel required authorization we didn't possess, and the sounds of activity on the other side suggested a well-trafficked area where our emergence would be immediately noticed. It was Davin who identified an alternative, a ventilation shaft wide enough to accommodate us, leading upward toward what might have been environmental control systems. The ascent through the shaft was agonizing. Davin's suppressed groans of pain echoed in the confined space as we hauled ourselves upward, meter by painful meter. Marina went first, then helped pull Davin up behind her while I supported his weight from below. The shaft terminated in a grill that opened onto a secondary processing area, smaller than the main hub but no less horrific in its purpose. Here, the true nature of the redistribution became undeniable. Medical servitors moved between examination stations where unconscious citizens were being systematically disassembled. Organs were extracted and placed in preservation units bearing the seal of the Adeptus Mechanicus. Limbs were removed and transferred to cybernetic enhancement stations. The more intact specimens were fitted with neural implants that would transform them into servitors, mindless biological components of Imperial machinery. The processing facility's alarm system activated without warning, bathing the chamber in pulsing red light. Vox announcements echoed through the space, directing security forces to containment breach points. Whether our infiltration had been discovered or some other incident had triggered the alert, the result was the same: increased activity and heightened security throughout the facility. Davin's military training asserted itself through his pain and fever. He motioned toward an emergency evacuation route marked on the wall, a pathway designed to allow personnel to escape in case of catastrophic system failure. The route would take us upward, away from the processing areas, and toward the administrative levels where we might find both medical supplies and information about what was happening to our world. We had barely emerged from the ventilation shaft when a security patrol rounded the corner ahead. Davin reacted with startling speed for a man in his condition, pushing Marina and me back into a recessed doorway before stepping into the corridor. What followed was a deliberate sacrifice I will carry with me until my final day. Davin engaged the patrol directly, using his remaining strength to create a diversion that would allow Marina and me to escape. The sound of his stub revolver echoed through the corridor, followed by the more distinctive crack of Law's weapons. I held Marina back as she instinctively moved to help her brother, knowing that his decision had already been made. The seconds stretched into eternity as we waited for the patrol to pursue Davin away from our position. When the corridor cleared, we moved quickly toward the evacuation route, the sounds of gunfire and alarms fading behind us. Marina's face had hardened into a mask that contained her grief, channeling it into the cold determination that had kept us alive this far. The evacuation shaft led us upward through the levels of the processing facility, each observation port revealing new horrors of the redistribution initiative. We passed chambers where servitor conversion processes were conducted on an industrial scale, laboratorium sections where genetic material was extracted and cataloged, stasis vaults where preserved organs were stored in endless rows of containment units. At the highest level, before the shaft terminated at a security bulkhead, we witnessed the final stage of the process. Transport containers were being loaded onto shuttles in a vast hangar bay, each bearing the classification codes of the Adeptus Munitorum. Servitor work crews moved with mechanical precision under the direction of robed Adeptus Mechanicus adepts. The process citizens of Tertius were being shipped off-world, their components and bodies feeding the insatiable appetite of the Imperium's war machine. The revelation struck me with physical force. Tertius hadn't been abandoned. It had been reclassified as a resource extraction world, its population more valuable as raw material than as productive citizens. The systematic collapse, the withdrawal of Imperial authority, the empowerment of the gangs, all deliberate steps in transforming a failing hive into a harvesting ground. As Marina and I considered our next move, trapped between the horrors below and the uncertainty above, I understood with terrible clarity that our struggle was no longer simply for survival. We had become witnesses to an atrocity sanctioned by the very Imperium we had served faithfully all our lives. The question was no longer whether we could reach safety, but whether safety existed anywhere in a system that could discard an entire world's population with such calculated efficiency. The maintenance shaft terminated in a service junction that opened into what had once been an administratum records facility. Dust-covered abandoned data slates and cogitator terminals, evidence of a hasty evacuation rather than the methodical stripping we'd witnessed in lower levels. Marina moved with mechanical precision as she checked Davin's pack for anything useful. Her face remained impassive, but the slight tremor in her hands betrayed the grief she couldn't afford to process yet. We paused only long enough to get our bearings. My internal map of the hive placed us in the upper midsection, where the administrative apparatus had once coordinated the endless stream of production reports from the manufactorums below. The air here carried less of the toxic miasma that permeated the lower levels, almost sweet by comparison. It was the first sign that we'd breached the invisible barrier between the abandoned zones and those still deemed worthy of environmental maintenance. The transition became more evident as we progressed through the abandoned office complexes. Emergency lighting still functioned on automated systems. Climate control maintained a temperature that didn't require the layered clothing we'd grown accustomed to wearing. Most telling was the absence of scavenger damage, no stripped wiring, no missing floor plates, no evidence of desperate people harvesting materials for survival. This level hadn't been abandoned due to collapse. It had been evacuated by design. We discovered the first processing station in what had once been an administratum assessment chamber. The room had been repurposed with clinical efficiency. Examination tables arranged in precise rows, diagnostic equipment still humming with active power, data terminals displaying scrolling information in the green text of active systems. The surfaces gleamed with the sterility of regular maintenance. Marina examined the equipment with the practiced eye of a medique, her fingers tracing the unfamiliar modifications to standard diagnostic tools. Her expression hardened as recognition dawned. These weren't medical instruments for healing, they were assessment tools for categorization. Human categorization. The adjacent chamber confirmed our worst fears. Rows of transparent cylinders filled the space, each large enough to contain a human body in suspension. Most stood empty, but several at the far end contained floating figures, citizens preserved in amniotic fluid, neural probes inserted at the base of the skull, data feeds monitoring vital signs. Their faces remained frozen in expressions of confusion or terror, the last emotion experienced before the suspension process activated. These weren't the desperate underhive dwellers we'd seen processed below. Their clothing and physical condition marked them as mid-level administrators, factorum supervisors, guild officials, the productive class that had kept Tertius functioning. People like me. People who had believed themselves valuable to the Imperium's machinery. A central control station displayed the processing statistics in the dispassionate language of bureaucracy. Assessment completion, 78.3%. Resource extraction efficiency, 91.7%. Viable specimens, 12,457. The numbers represented tens of thousands of lives reduced to resource calculations. The adjacent door bore the aquila of the Adeptus Munitorum. It slid open at our approach, its security systems apparently configured to admit anyone who had reached this level. Beyond lay the true horror of what had become of our world. The chamber extended the length of several hab blocks, its ceiling lost in shadow above. Hundreds of servitors moved with mechanical precision through the space, their augmetic components gleaming under the harsh lumens. They processed an endless stream of data at cogitator stations, their organic components, human components, reduced to biological processors serving the machinery of imperial bureaucracy. What struck me with physical force was the recognition, faces I knew, the profile of Tiber Kell, who had managed supply logistics for my Manufactorum section, the distinctive gait of Madame Vosht, who had taught imperial history in the mid-hive education blocks. The unique augmetic hand of Foreman Drust, who had lost his original limb, saving three workers from a Prometheum fire. All moved with the vacant precision of servitors, their humanity excised, their bodies repurposed to serve the Imperium in a more direct capacity than their previous lives had allowed. The sight of these people, colleagues, neighbors, citizens of Tertius, reduced to biological components of Imperial machinery, crystallized the truth I had been assembling from fragments of evidence. Tertius hadn't failed, it had been harvested. A raised platform at the chamber's far end contained what appeared to be a command center. Figures in the distinctive robes of administratum officials moved between data stations, their attention focused on hololithic displays showing the hive's various levels. Red zones marked areas designated for processing, while green indicated completed extraction. Nearly three quarters of the hive glowed red. We skirted the edges of the vast chamber, using the servitor processing stations as cover. The officials paid no attention to the servitors themselves, their focus entirely on the data being processed rather than the biological machines doing the processing. Their indifference provided our only advantage. A side passage led to what had once been an administratum archive. The room had been repurposed as a transit depot, with manifests displayed on active data slates. Marina moved swiftly to examine them while I kept watch at the entrance. Her Medicaid's training allowed her to process information with remarkable efficiency, her fingers scrolling through document after document with practiced precision. The grim picture emerged through fragments of official communication. Adeptus Munitorum Edict 7729 Gamma had reclassified Tertius from production grade alpha to resource extraction designation. The hive's declining production efficiency had triggered automated protocols for optimal resource redistribution. The population itself had been designated as the primary resource for extraction. The manifests detailed the categories of extraction: able-bodied citizens suitable for labor reassignment to other imperial worlds, specialized workers whose skills warranted relocation, those suitable for servitor conversion, and those whose only value lay in their organic components. The cold precision of the categorization, the methodical processing of human lives into resource units, represented the Emperor's calculus in its most naked form. Most damning was the timeline. The edict had been issued 3 standard years before the first visible signs of collapse. The systematic withdrawal of Mechanica support, the reduction in supply shipments, the redeployment of PDF forces, all had been deliberate steps in a controlled demolition of Tertius society, designed to maximize extraction efficiency while minimizing resource expenditure in the process. We had never had a chance. The collapse had been engineered from the beginning. A sudden commotion from the main chamber interrupted our investigation. The distinctive sound of armored boots on metal flooring indicated the arrival of security forces. We retreated deeper into the archive as voices echoed through the connected chambers. The security sweep was methodical, moving from section to section with military precision. A storage closet provided temporary shelter, its shelves still stocked with the mundane supplies of bureaucratic function, data slates, printing materials, official seals. Marina's breathing was controlled but rapid, her Medicaid's training allowing her to manage the fear that threatened to overwhelm us both. The voices grew closer, then stopped directly outside our hiding place. the uniforms of the dead gang enforcers proved our salvation. In the dim emergency lighting, the crude insignia of the Ashbourne Reavers was sufficient to confuse the security patrol. They registered our presence as authorized enforcement units rather than infiltrators, their cursory inspection satisfied by the gang markings we'd adopted as disguise. The patrol moved on, leaving us trembling with the knowledge of how narrow our escape had been. With the security forces focused on the main chamber, we slipped into the adjacent corridor. The passage led to what had once been an official's private office, now repurposed as a security monitoring station. The screens displayed various sections of the upper mid-hive, tracking the movement of enforcement squads and processing teams. Most disturbing were the images from the lower levels, where combat servitors, constructed from the bodies of former citizens, systematically eliminated pockets of resistance. The central display showed the spaceport, where transport vessels were being loaded with containerized cargo. The manifest designations matched those we had discovered in the transit depot, human cargo categorized by extraction type, bound for various imperial destinations. One vessel bore the distinctive markings of a Mechanicus transport, its cargo listed simply as biological components. A secondary display tracked the progress of what was labeled the cleansing operation. Enforcement squads were methodically working their way through the remaining populated areas, categorizing and processing the survivors according to the Imperial Edict. The operation had accelerated in recent days, with quotas increased and processing capacity expanded. The reason became clear as we studied the command notifications. A fleet of Imperial transports was scheduled to arrive within 2 standard weeks to complete the final extraction. Tertius would be stripped of its human resources, then abandoned entirely or repurposed for some other Imperial need. The fate of its people had been determined by cold calculation, their value measured against the cost of maintaining a failing production world. The Emperor's calculus had found them wanting as citizens but valuable as resources. The monitoring station included a secure Vox unit, still connected to the official channels used by the enforcement command. Marina's fingers moved over the controls with unexpected familiarity. Her work in the public dispensary had required coordination with emergency response systems. She located the enforcement command frequency and monitored the transmissions, her expression darkening as she absorbed the tactical information. The cleansing operation had entered its final phase. Enforcement units were being redirected to the spaceport and upper levels in preparation for the arrival of Imperial oversight. The remaining population in the lower and mid-hive had been written off as terminal resources, too costly to process given the approaching deadline. Instead, atmospheric systems would be permanently disabled, transforming the lower hive into a death zone where the remaining citizens would expire without the expense of direct intervention. Our window for escape was measured in hours, not days. The monitoring station's data terminal provided access to the enforcement command network. I searched desperately for any information that might offer a path to survival. The spaceport security protocols, the transport vessel manifests, the enforcement patrol schedules, I absorbed everything that might create an opportunity, however slim. One manifest entry caught my attention, a transport designated for specialized labor relocation, scheduled for departure within 6 hours. Unlike the cargo vessels containing process servitors or biological components, this transport would carry intact humans whose skills warranted preservation. The manifest listed Medicaid personnel among the priority extraction categories. I turned to Marina, the plan forming even as I struggled with its implications. Her Medicaid credentials, still encoded in her identity chip, might secure her passage on the specialized transport. My former status as a factorum supervisor offered no such value. The production expertise of Tertius was being replaced by servitor labor on more efficient worlds. Marina understood immediately. Her refusal was silent but absolute, her hand gripping mine with a strength that belied her exhausted state. We had survived together this far. We would face whatever came next as one. The decision was taken from us by the sudden wail of alarm klaxons. The monitoring station's displays shifted to emergency protocols, showing a security breach in the lower processing levels. The enforcement command channels erupted with reports of organized resistance, not the desperate last stands of trapped citizens, but coordinated attacks on processing facilities. Somewhere in the dying hive, people were fighting back. The enforcement patrols redeployed with practiced efficiency, security assets redirected to contain the uprising. The monitoring station tracked their movement away from the upper levels, creating a temporary gap in coverage around the spaceport access corridors. It was the narrowest of opportunities, likely to close within minutes as command reassessed the threat distribution. We moved with desperate speed through the abandoned administrative sections, following the patrol deployment maps we had memorized from the monitoring station. The enforcement uniforms we had stolen provided a thin veneer of legitimacy, sufficient to avoid immediate challenge from the automated security systems. Each intersection required careful assessment, each open area represented potential exposure. The access corridor to the spaceport transit system stretched before us, its security checkpoint manned by a single enforcement officer monitoring the identity verification system. The stolen uniforms would not withstand close inspection, nor would our identity chips pass verification against the current authorization protocols. I made the decision that would haunt whatever remained of my life. The information about hidden resource caches in the lower hive, stockpiles I had helped establish when the first signs of supply disruption appeared, represented value to the enforcement command. Information that might accelerate the processing operation, that might increase the extraction efficiency before the Imperial oversight arrived. I approached the checkpoint alone, Marina concealed in an adjacent maintenance alcove. The enforcement officer registered my approach with professional disinterest, his attention focused on the verification system rather than my features. I presented the data slate containing the cache locations, explaining its value to the operation with the confidence of someone authorized to possess such information. The officer's interest was immediate, his assessment of the data slate's contents confirming its value. The verification process was perfunctory, his eagerness to pass the information up the command chain, overriding standard security protocols. He transmitted the data immediately, receiving authorization to expedite the bearer to command level for debriefing. The authorization extended to one additional personnel, a contingency I had gambled everything on. Marina emerged from concealment at my signal, her Medicaid credentials sufficient to justify her inclusion in the expedited transfer. The officer processed her identity chip with minimal scrutiny, his attention focused on the potential commendation the cache information might earn him. The transit car to the spaceport level admitted us without further verification, the enforcement command authorization overriding the standard security protocols. As the doors sealed and the car began its ascent, the weight of what I had done pressed upon me with physical force. I had traded information that would accelerate the death of countless citizens for the chance to save Marina. The Emperor's calculus had infected me as surely as it had the officials who had condemned Tertius. The spaceport level pulsed with organized activity. Enforcement squads coordinated the loading of transport vessels. Processing teams managed the flow of categorized human cargo. Administratum officials oversaw the documentation of the extraction operation. The machinery of imperial efficiency functioned with cold precision, transforming the population of a dying world into resources for the Imperium's endless hunger. Our enforcement uniforms allowed us to move through the periphery of this activity without immediate challenge. The specialized transport vessel stood on a secondary landing pad, its boarding process already underway. Medicaid personnel in various states of confusion or sedation were being guided aboard by enforcement officers, their value to the Imperium sufficient to warrant relocation rather than processing. I guided Marina toward the boarding queue, my grip on her arm communicating what I could not say aloud. Her resistance was subtle but unmistakable, her steps slowing as she recognized my intention. The enforcement officer managing the boarding process examined her credentials with professional thoroughness, confirming her Medicaid qualifications against the priority extraction list. My own credentials received more scrutiny, the officer's expression hardening as he registered my production supervision classification. Such skills were in surplus across the Imperium, their value insufficient to justify the resources required for relocation. His assessment was immediate and final. I was designated for standard processing rather than specialized extraction. In that moment, facing the implacable machinery of imperial calculation, I made my final choice. I pressed the merchant's data slate into Marina's hands, the evidence of Tertius's deliberate harvesting encoded in its memory. The enforcement officer interpreted the exchange as the surrendering of personal effects, a standard procedure before processing separation. Marina's eyes held mine for a final moment, communicating everything that could not be spoken. Then she was guided aboard the transport vessel, her value to the Imperium securing her survival, while my obsolescence condemned me to whatever fate awaited those deemed expendable. I was escorted to a holding area for standard processing, a sterile chamber where dozens of citizens awaited categorization. The enforcement officer's report noted my cooperation, recommending consideration for servitor conversion rather than component harvesting, a small mercy in the Empire's calculus. When the processing team's attention was diverted by a priority alert, I slipped away through a maintenance access point. The enforcement command's focus on the uprising in the lower levels created gaps in security coverage that allowed me to reach an abandoned communication center. The equipment still functioned on emergency power, connected to the Hive's internal Vox network. I recorded this testimony on a data slate found in the communication center, uploading it to every functioning Vox channel in the dying Hive. The enforcement command would locate and silence the transmission quickly, but perhaps some would hear it before the end. Perhaps some would understand that their fate had been determined not by failure or misfortune, but by the cold calculation of an Imperium that valued them only as resources to be harvested. The sounds of enforcement patrols grow closer as I complete this record. Soon they will find me, and I will join the countless citizens of Tertius process to feed the Imperium's endless hunger. But in these final moments, I have come to understand the true horror of our existence. The ruthless calculus of human survival that transforms entire populations into resources when their productivity falters. The patrol has reached my level now. Their methodical progress through the adjacent chambers gives me perhaps minutes before discovery. I will join the resistance in the lower levels, adding one more body to the doomed struggle against the inevitable.